When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hugo Lloris, Kieran Trippier, Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen, Danny Rose, Moussa Sissoko, Victor Wanyama, Christian Eriksen, Dele, Son Heung-min, Lucas Moura, Ben Davis, Fernando Llorente, Eric Lamela, fuck it, Paolo Gazzaniga, Juan Foyth, Eric Dier and Oliver Skip, heroes to a man. Welcome, listeners, to the latest episode of The Extra Inch, or as I'm going to call it, The Full-Blown Erection. I am joined by my psychic and best friend, Barney. Hello, Barney.
Come on, Whitley, come on.
Yes, come on, mate, we made it. We're in the Champions League final.
It's just bananas, man.
Isn't it unbelievable?
We were dead as dead. We're not, we're alive, man.
We're
alive.
We were resurrected.
Through Fernando Llorente, he came on. Holland, they've never seen a man like him before. They've never seen someone like him.
Honestly, the lanky streak of piss came good. I can believe what I was watching.
He would tear up the Eredivisie. Honestly, there was moments where he looked like Berbatov. The ball was just, didn't matter if it was just in his kind of atmosphere. He just controlled it and brought it down. He was superb. And everybody was superb. Even those that weren't superb, they get a pass. They were superb.
They get a pass for what is one of the greatest nights in Tottenham Hotspur's history. I don't think that's any exaggeration to say that. It was utterly, ridiculously incredible. And I think it's conclusive proof that signings are good. Since our most recent signing, Lucas Moura, was the absolute hero of the day. I think we should start, though, by talking about where we were watching the match. And I'll start because it was slightly less exciting than where you were watching it. So I was sat at home alone. Which I was very happy about. I felt like this was a game where I didn't want to be in the company of any non-Spurs fans, and if I couldn't watch it with Spurs fans, I wanted to watch it alone. So I got home from work quite late. I was in a bit of a hurry. I made some dinner, and I sat with a vest on underneath a blanket, sipping on a glass of sherry with ice in it. And I'm not a sherry drinker, but my parents donated a bottle which was going to get chucked out of their drinks cabinet. So a very random drink for a very random night. And when the third goal went in, I let out what can only be described as a single pitch shriek, which went on for about 10 seconds. I didn't know how to respond to it. But Bard, your environment was much more exciting. Tell me where you were watching the game.
I watched it at the Fighting Cock Social, which to be honest has had mixed results over the kind of 2 years it's been running. I think we've only ever won two games, which was the two Dortmund away games actually. But it was packed. There was a hope, an optimism before the game, and obviously their two quick goals kind of hit us. And around about half time, we came to the realization that we're still proud of Tottenham and we love Tottenham, and we were hoping more in, like, you know, as being good supporters, let's hope we can do something here. And then gradually, as the second half went on, that kind of hope just changed into belief, and kind of like how Spurs were playing, that they could smell it almost. We could smell it coming, and as soon as it got to 2-2, we're like, holy shit now. From being in an impossible situation, it's there. We're just one goal away. And it was a question of just waiting and hoping that chance came. And if I'm going to be brutally honest, I thought the chance had been gone. And I thought that was it. And it was going to be an heroic but ultimately, you know, a failure. But then it just blew up. And it was almost, I didn't even seem to see it with my whole eyes, like my looking straight out. I seemed to catch it out of the corner of my eye. And because the time was up, it was 95 minutes had gone up. And so I was almost turning away, and in the corner of my eye, I just saw Llorente get involved, and then Dele with a lovely flick, and then it was in the back of the net, and it was pandemonium. It was like that scene in Game of Thrones where Jon Snow is getting crushed in the Battle of the Bastards. And everything is happening. There's beer, there's sweat, there's tears, and it was just a big pulsating mass. And yeah, it was unbelievable. I started crying. I'm not a crier, but I just lost my shit. And I thought, I need to speak to someone. So I rang my wife, and I was like, I couldn't talk to her. And then I saw Alex, and he was in pieces. And I support Italy. I've said that many, many times, but this was something else. This was the team that I've supported all my life.
Why have you got to bring Italy into it? For God's sake, one episode. Like, just let it go.
I've just shown that this is Tottenham Hotspur and my life is what I spend every day thinking about and writing or tweeting and talking about. And they're just amazing. And it was beautiful.
You're so right there. And I got messages on Facebook, through WhatsApp, from people that I've not spoken to in months or even years in some cases, because they know that Spurs is such a integral part of my identity, and they basically know me as a Spurs fan. They don't think of me beyond that anymore. Yeah. Because I'm not part of their life. And it was really nice that people kind of got in touch and said, look, I'm really happy for you, and I hope you enjoy it. It's the same at work today. People know me, you know, as someone they work with, but also as a Spurs fan. That's my reputation in my place of work. And I took in my Spurs scarf, I hung it up in the office. People were talking about it, and I just wanted to talk to anyone and everyone about the match. Unfortunately, I don't work with many football fans. The one fan I do work with is an Arsenal fan, and I made sure that scarf is in his line of sight all day. I just wanted him to know how I was feeling for the whole day, basically.
I mean, Tottenham, in the last two kind of Champions League ties, we've been involved in games which go beyond football and go beyond... It goes beyond sport. It's pure drama. It's games which have hung... I mean, the VAR game, that was VAR's design for the home audience, and that gave the home audience a whole new kind of element to watching football. And then last night, it really was a Hollywood film. You can imagine that being shot in slow motion, Sissoko's big hoof upfield, and then all of a sudden, you know, you see the floodlights dropping down, the sweat dripping, dum, 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 bosh. And then you can imagine that being a Hollywood movie. And that's what last night was. And I guess that's... The Champions League is looking for that. It's looking to be the showpiece of football. And we've delivered two games like that. And it's just an amazing thing.
I think what you're saying there basically is Tottenham Hotspur, when you're bringing the DVD out, for God's sake. I got a WhatsApp call last night from a website in the States I've spoken to before, and I can't remember in what kind. I think I gave an interview with them as a sort of fan a couple of years back, and they called me and they said, can we speak to you? And then they called me shortly after, and I didn't know what it was for, and I said, look, you're not going to get a lot of sense out of me. I'm a bit incoherent. I was just totally jubilant. I was tweeting nonsense. I was WhatsApping all my friends, and I was just talking absolute nuts. So it turned out they were recording the call. I didn't know they were recording the call at all, but they were recording me for a podcast, and I was just like talking like I am now, just full of excitement, and there was nothing coming out of my mouth of any kind of analytical sense at all. But the one thing I did say when I kind of clicked into gear and realised I was being recorded was, this is absolutely massive for Spurs in the long term, in terms of our kind of global appeal and global reach. And I think what being in the Champions League final, what this will do to us as a club is insane. Like the number of people who will be watching this match who actually won't have heard of, or if they've heard of us, they won't know anything about Tottenham Hotspur. Mm. It kind of puts us on the map. It makes us a main player, and it opens doors that wouldn't necessarily have been opened before. So no wonder Daniel Levy was in the thick of the celebrations last night in the dressing room, because this is massive for off the pitch stuff as well as on the pitch stuff. But let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk a little bit about the match. So how did you find the first half? Because there's a lot of I think there's people were quite stoical at half time, and I think rightly so. What did you make of the first half?
The thing that gave me hope out of all of it, despite being two down, is I thought we created some decent openings, and we started, unlike in the first first leg where we didn't really lay a glove on them. We opened them up, we hit the post, and Eriksen had an opportunity. So I knew there was a possibility for us to score the goals we needed, because I don't think Ajax were as they weren't as great in defence as they were. They were always a threat going forward. I think Neres being injured and pushing Tadic wide up against Trippier actually worked to their advantage, even though it meant they put Dolberg on, who's an awful footballer. But it did put Tadic up against Trippier, and it caused us a lot of problems. But even despite being 2-0, there was possibly something there. There was a weakness to their defence, and which we managed to expose eventually.
In a strange way, I actually feel like being 2 down rather than 1 down had the right psychological effect, in that it made us totally change our mindset. We've got to just go for it. We have to go for this. Mm. And the attacking substitution at half-time, bringing on Llorente for Wanyama, was totally the right move, of course. I mean, it was fairly... Everyone pretty much predicted that would be the half-time change. It made sense. We sort of changed our approach from minute one of the second half, because the long ball started. We knew they would happen. We saw that Ajax had a bit of a vulnerability to a long ball in the first leg. And it was just a case of, can we create something from these knockdowns? Can we get enough players around Llorente to create chaos? And ultimately we did. We've spoken a bit about Llorente already, but I think it's worth sort of lingering a little bit on him. Because what he did was massively unconventional. It was almost like Marouane Fellaini-esque tactics. You know, stick on the big guy who's got a reasonable touch and can hold the ball up and just see what happens. He wasn't perfect by any stretch. I mean, if Lucas Moura hadn't scored that second goal, I would have been sticking pins in a Fernando Llorente doll today, because that was a shocking miss. But he was so effective overall. Some of his touches, some of his knockdowns. His passing wasn't always great, but some of his knockdowns were majestic. And the way he kind of brought the ball out of the sky on a couple of occasions, kind of rolled back the ears and just looked like a proper footballer. And there's something to be said for his Champions League campaign. He hasn't been great across the board. He hasn't been great in some of the Premier League games. But in the Champions League, he's been hugely effective. And do you think that's partly to do with his style of play and how European teams cope with that kind of traditional old school centre forward?
Yeah, I think so. But I think it's also something to do with Llorente the man. We saw Liverpool come back against Barcelona, and there's something to be said about Liverpool's just sheer belief that, and they just have this belief that it's their right, it's their God-given right to beat any team that comes in front of them at Anfield. And I think there's something in Llorente where you're looking at a World Cup winner, a guy who's won titles and cups and everything else, and even though he's rubbish, he does seem to just have that belief that I belong here and I can make a difference. And whereas maybe before we in someone like Janssen, you see him kind of like crumble and fade away, Llorente continues and he persevere in that I'm good enough to be here and I should be here and I can make a difference. And I think that has a massive impact, his general kind of belief. But by going long to him, also what we did finally is put Dele where he's the most dangerous, when he's close to goal. When he sits deep, he's just wasted. And you saw two assists last night, counter-attack and then the pass through to Lucas. You've got to put your best players where they play best. And unfortunately, because we've got no midfield, Dele's always having to play deep. But as soon as we put him near the goal, you saw what happened. And had Kane been fit, I think we probably would have done Ajax over the two legs. So I don't think Blind would have been able to handle Kane for 180 minutes.
I think that's a really important point you just made about Dele. And it was notable that Eriksen was the one who dropped deep into midfield, whereas Dele was pushed forward, playing a lot higher. Both, I thought, had really good second halves. Eriksen was scheming. He was picking up the pieces. He was taking risks for the first time in what felt like months. He was taking major risks and they were coming off for him. Eriksen had a really, really impressive second half. Dele was next level. I mean, some of the stuff he did yesterday was Dele at his peak. And it was so nice to see, because he's clearly been playing through injury. I mean, he's got a cast on his arm. That's one injury. But there's something going on below the waistline as well. I don't know. There's some kind of injury going on there, but he was great, and he's so inventive, so clever. He's kind of thinking one step ahead of the defense, and some of his passing was just a delight. I mean, it all clicked, but
there was one pass I think Dele did in the first half. Did I imagine it? It was like a kind of a Messi pass Messi did against Liverpool, where he just sliced their defence in two.
But no, you're quite right.
I can't remember now. Yeah, to Son.
Son, and Son had to kind of toe poke a shot a little bit earlier. It was quite a difficult chance for him to take on his right foot, but it was a great ball from Dele to create that opportunity. Let's talk about Lucas's finishing, because, I mean, we've seen some good finishes from Lucas across this season, no doubt about it, but I thought these three were all almost technically flawless. Which was your favourite of his three goals?
I think, even though I missed it because I had my head in my hands after Llorente had missed his opportunity, I think the second goal was probably the best one. I think I said to somebody during the game, he's very instinctive, and when he doesn't have much time to think about something, I trust him more than when he's running through on goal. I think maybe it was against Bournemouth where he had a couple of touches and then shot and he didn't put it away. But last night it was 1-2, boom, touch, or quick feet in the area, almost like a bit of futsal like they play in Brazil, where he just sweeps it past the defender, boom, before you know it, it's in the back of the net.
That second goal, the speed at which his feet moves was just exceptional. I thought that goal was a thing of beauty. He showed not only the desire to get to the ball first, but then each touch he took was absolutely inch perfect to create the opportunity for himself, and he finished it magnificently.
I mean, it was fast, even in slow motion. That's how quick his feet were.
So that's spot on. That's absolutely perfectly put. His overall performance was great as well. The thrust that he added to our team was perfect. I feel like in the first half, we had to play very carefully, didn't we, in the first half, because we were trying to beat their press constantly, and it led to not everything came off because we were having to play this kind of really careful build-up where every pass had to be so precise and nothing could be too rushed. But he was shown some nice touches. What Fernando Llorente adds coming on in the second half is we can skip a lot of that stuff. Mm. We can just bypass the press by going long and early. And Lucas, if he can get on the ball when defences aren't set, he can wreak havoc, and he did, and it worked out wonderfully. Let's talk a little bit about Toby Alderweireld as well, because I think in a game where Lucas gave a 10 out of 10 performance and Dele's been spoken of incredibly highly, I think Toby Alderweireld's performance has gone a little bit under the radar. But oh my God, that guy was absolutely imperious last night. Not just his defending, which was fantastic, but his use of the ball and his intelligence when Ajax were playing at their best in the first half, and he was under so much pressure constantly from the press. I thought he was exquisite in the way he used the ball. What did you make of Alderweireld and Vertonghen at the back?
Yeah, I think this is where the difference comes between watching it in a social setting and watching it at home. In a social setting like that, everybody, I mean, I thought he played well, but for me, he didn't stand out as much as someone like Danny Rose did or Sissoko did, who were real kind of crowd pleasers. So I think Alderweireld this season has been quietly good. I mean, he's always been good, but I think he's definitely back to his best after he had a bit of a wobble last year.
Yeah, and you're quite right to pick up Rose as well. He had a really, really good performance. The thing about Rose was he was really aggressive, but it was very controlled aggression, except for the moment where he threw the ball down, which was which was highly enjoyable, to be quite honest with you. But he was so controlled and intelligent in the way he used the ball. There were none of these usual kind of hope for the best crosses, or very few of them. Instead, it was kind of take a touch, come inside, look for a pass. And that's the Rose I really appreciate. And I thought he was excellent. He didn't like getting taken off. Did you see his reaction with Pochettino when he came off? He really wanted to stay on and see it through to the end. And I kind of admire him for that as well. And then obviously he stuck it to Rudhullet in his post-match comments, which was also highly enjoyable.
I mean, it probably was the right call in the end. He definitely was running out of energy. And Davies, I think he was quite important in the winning goal. I think he won a big 50-50. But yeah, I'm a huge Danny Rose fan, and I'll always defend him. I love the way he played. His nutmeg in the build-up to Lucas's first goal was brilliant. And, you know, I have a lot of faith in him continuing to improve and get somewhere near back to where he was. And if he does that, we'll have a fantastic fullback and someone a younger left-sided fullback can learn from.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. It's Nathan here. I was out while the boys were recording with some non-football fans, which is really weird because they couldn't really understand why I just had a massive shit-eating grin on my face the whole time and laughing at random. I wanted to just interject a little bit with my own experience. I was also at the Fighting Cock Social with Bardi, which was the best footballing experience of my life to date, I reckon. It was absolutely incredible. When Lucas scored the winner, I couldn't breathe. I tried to scream. I opened my mouth and nothing came out. Just hugging and embracing strangers for dear life. I met up with some school friends who were at the Fighting Cock Social as well, which is amazing. Just an absolutely ridiculous experience. If you want to move on to that sort of dry tactical stuff, and I can totally understand if you don't want to, if for you it's just all about the moment and the passion and everything else. But tactically, the interesting thing for me is the story of Llorente. Why was Llorente so good in this second game as opposed to the first game? Why did play so? Someone on Twitter, Jose Perez, not to be confused with Jesus Perez, obviously, mentioned before the first leg that Ajax have had some problems with target men in the past. And Llorente started that first game, and we did try to play long to him, and it sort of bounced off him awkwardly, and we couldn't win the second ball, and he had some bad touches, and I thought, okay, that was a decent idea, but he didn't materialise. Throw that out, Son will be back, Llorente's back on the bench, and he was. But in the second half, he was just absolutely magical. So the question, the big tactical question, and I haven't been back and watched the game yet, but I will several times. The question is, why did it work? Why were we able to play long to Llorente in the second game? The two ideas in my head simply are the fact that he was only playing the second half, so that he had that sort of... he didn't play the weekend beforehand, so he had some rest. He came on fresh when everyone's a bit more tired. And also, he knows he only needs... to get through 45 minutes, maybe penalties as well, but whatever, so he can give more, and he can give twice as much towards each effort. Maybe that was the advantage, or maybe it was simply because we created, or we were in a more open game, and we really embraced the playing long, whereas I think in the first game we want to play long, but on our terms. We want to build it, and we want to work it, and then we want to play long, and when we do play long, we don't want to float it really high, we want to place it and ping it. In this game, we just said, we're the English club, we've got two banks of four, and we're just going to smack it long up high to our big man on a massively stretched out pitch, and maybe that's why it worked. I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch the game. Back over to you, Windy.
It would be remiss if we signed off now without talking a little bit about the final. Oh my God, I would not want to be Pochettino in terms of having to make the team selection for that final game. So in all likelihood, given what we know from team news, Harry Kane is likely to be fit and available for selection. But also, surprisingly, Harry Winks is also back in training now and will likely be available as well. Alongside that, we've got the potential of Serge Aurier coming back in and being up for selection too. So how the hell does Pochettino handle this one? Does he just stick with the team that beat Ajax, or does he bring Kane and Winks, two vital players, and perhaps even Aurier back in? What would you do, Bardi?
I mean, Winks starts. If he's fit, he starts. You just take out Wanyama and put Winks in there. With Kane, Kane seems to be, the moment he can run around, Pochettino plays him. And I think if he can run around, he'll probably start, which I think is probably not the right idea. I would keep him on the bench and bring him on to make an impact after maybe 60 minutes have gone, when possibly they're a little bit tired. I would keep the Lucas, Son and Dele options, and obviously Llorente, Kane on the bench.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like Lucas is pretty much undroppable after getting a hat-trick in the semi-final. It would seem so harsh to do anything differently there. I suppose then that leaves probably Son. Son or Kane is the selection headache.
Yeah, I think you start Son. But before we sign off, I think we need to give a big shout-out to Sissoko, Tottenham's Player of the Year. He was incredible. he got booked really early, and that was a worry. But he's so smart for a player whose touch and passing is sometimes pretty bad and pretty stupid. He was so smart in the way he played, and he had a yellow card, but never once were you kind of worried like a Dyer. If that was Dyer, you'd be, every time he went for a tackle, you'd be wincing. But Sissoko was very calm. He moved to right back. He played everywhere. There was, I think there was a moment in the second half, maybe with 5 minutes to go, where he was the one chasing Ziyech that all the way down to the other end and slowing him up. He was superb. And we really missed him in that first 30 minutes of the first leg.
And I think one thing you can always say for Sissoko is he's a proper team player. He kind of he knows his limitations, as you've just pointed out there. But he does his bit and more for the team, and he makes things gel together in a way that I didn't think would be feasible for a player like him. So yeah, you're quite right to single him out.
But not just on the pitch; it seems to be off the pitch as well. He's become this kind of the standard bearer, like the person at the front of the pack. He's the one that joins the team together when the team celebrates. It's always his song that they're singing. It's always him that they're looking to and talking to. And when he arrives in a group setting, I mean, looking at the people's Instagram stories, it's great to get a little kind of insight into how they react behind in the changing room. But it's always Sissoko that they're looking to and cheering and getting to come in. And this turnaround in him has been quite amazing.
And I think that's a product of how much the players appreciate what he does for them on the pitch. Like, he's a very selfless player. He does a lot of running for others, Trippier being one. You know, the joke was that he was babysitting Trippier right back. I mean, it was a joke, but there was some truth in it. I mean, he was covering a lot of Trippier's flaws athletically. And actually, it was working really well when he was playing towards that side earlier in the season. And he's clearly, like you say, the glue in the dressing room, and players. That's the go-to song, isn't it? The old Moussa Sissoko chant in the dressing room. Eric Lamela coming on was great. He looked really good until the 97th minute, where he tried to dribble his way out of his own box and nearly gave us all a heart attack. I don't know what he was thinking there, but I was glad he was there, primarily because his Instagram was lit post game. It was very enjoyable to watch his goings on Instagram. And yeah, thank God someone was filming, because it was a sight to behold.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Lamela fan. I've quite often said that in many areas, but when he came on, he, for all his faults, I think he has as a footballer, is not really why I'm not a huge fan of him. But he comes on, he held the ball, he used the ball really well, and he was what he should be, an excellent squad option. And that's exactly when you need a player like that. And it was great that he was available yesterday, because we needed that little bit different to come off the bench and try and change things.
Mate, when Eric Lamela scores the winner in Madrid, I want you to apologise.
Of course, I'll do anything to anybody for Lamela to score the winner in Madrid.
Right. No one forget what Barley just said. Note it down. Thank you for listening. This has been a very jubilant Extra Inch. We've been less analytical than usual, but I think you'll understand why. Hope you've enjoyed hearing us reminisce on a wonderful, wonderful night of football for Tottenham Hotspur. I love this club. Thank you, Bardi.
No worries, Wendy. Lovely to talk to you, mate. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.